Hiking in these mountains is certainly rewarding, but it takes a lot of energy, and man, am I hungry. Luckily, I'm in North Ossetia, where food is almost a fourth religion, where recipes are handed down for generations without changes, and this qualifies North Ossetian cuisine for being part of the UNESCO World Heritage Intangible List. Let's dig in. Cheese is an important part of the national culture of North Ossetia. Larissa Kasayeva is someone engaged in traditional cheese making here and observing the indigenous methods of her ancestors. So cheese is universally loved. One of the stories is that an Arabic merchant put milk, goat's milk, in his pouch and he hit the road. And then later, when he reached for his milk, he actually found cheese curds. The Greeks believed Artemis created cheese. Do the Ossetians have their own origin story of where cheese came from?
Ossetians have no myths or legends about that. But I grew up in the mountains. I remember what daily life looked like there. And I try to channel my own childhood experiences into my work. Our cheese is known as Kobe cheese.
I've heard that every single gorge in Ossetia has its own specific type of cheese. For me, that seems impossible because there's so many different gorges. Can you explain this?
Traditionally, cheese has been very important as Ossetian pies. My sister used to tell me, Larissa, we can create something with our hands that no one else will ever be able to do. Growing up, I thought everyone made cheese in the same way, from start to finish, from milking the cows and so on. However, when we launched our blog, we started getting questions, and it became clear that people do it differently.
As you mentioned, there are different cheeses from different areas around the world. What makes Ossetian cheese unique and special?
It's the taste, the ripening process, and the taste. The creamy taste, which comes from organic ingredients, is what sets it apart. And it's also made with love and a lot of soul. My daughter once said we should just strain it. But I said, no, we need to do it with our fingers. Your soul goes into this product, and that's what makes it unique. The rest, like the ripening process, is also a part of that, but the soul is the most important thing.
So I have to ask, what is rennet? I know that it's important in making cheese, but what is it? What kind of an ingredient is it? And how does it work?
Rennet is a natural element in the stomachs of cows or smaller ruminants. I do everything myself. I buy the stomachs from a slaughterhouse. I wash them, clean them, add salt, and then, after a while, leave them to dry. The longer it's left to dry, the more effective it is. I can't tell you exactly how this process works, but it's a natural process. It gives cheese its unmistakable taste.
Now, I've heard that it's bad manners to ask to borrow or ask rennet from another person. Why is that? Is that true?
There was a special ritual. Let's say my rennet is weak and I ask my neighbor for some. She pours a little onto her stove and says that it's not in its power or force that she's giving me. She's just giving me it to help out, but she's keeping its potency for herself. Or you can just pay a little money. If I make some for someone else, I charge a nominal amount, maybe 5 or 10 rubles, because sometimes my rennet goes weak afterwards and it becomes a problem.
Cheese ages. I know that wine ages and that there's a reasoning behind that, but what does it mean for cheese?
In Ossetian, we call it fermenting. The rest of the process can be called ripening or aging. Cheese becomes ripe over time. My cheese doesn't always turn out the same. It depends on the weather, the temperature, and on other factors. Holes are a good sign for ripening, but sometimes it gets too dense. I don't know why, really. You use the same milk, you make it with the same pair of hands, but the taste is not always the same. You know what else? Cheese tastes best in spring. That's when it has this rich, creamy flavor. Here in the mountains, it's springtime until July, while the grass is green and the flowers are blooming. That's the best time for cheese. We literally call it spring cheese. It can be yellowish in color. In autumn, cheese can get fatty. The milk gets fatty, and so does the cheese. But you don't get that same creamy taste you get in the spring.
So we have beautiful examples of cheese here, but can we go and see where it's made?
This cheese here is slightly salty and pairs great with tea. I also have brined cheese. I'll show you.
So this might seem like a very simple question, but I have to ask, why is cheese always round or come in a wheel like this? Is there a reason, or is it just because it's easier?
The human head is also round. A circle is the most harmonious shape.
Sometimes cheese comes with a crust when it's been aging, and sometimes it does not. What's the difference? Why do some cheese have crusts and some don't?
That depends on the stage of ripening and fat content. The longer a cheese ripens, the more crust grows on it. It's autumn now, and the milk is fatty, so there's not much crust, but it's different in spring and summer.
I know that family secrets are handed down and recipes are handed down from generation to generation, something that you're very proud of. Do you have any family secrets of your own?
There's no secret. It's actually quite simple. It's all about natural enzymes and good pastures, nothing else.
Now, I know that you use milk from the morning and mix it with milk from the evening. That seems very interesting to me. Why do you do that?
Nights are short in summer, so cows leave to graze very early in the morning, before dawn. They don't graze in broad daylight. In the mountains and even on the plain, they hide from sunlight during the day. So they need to do some grazing before sunrise to produce milk by nightfall. They also come back late, so we have to milk them at night. We strain the milk and separate the cream from it in the morning. We get up very early to send our cows out to pasture before sunrise. The milk stays fresh. Even though there was no electricity in the mountains, the nights were short and the milk wouldn't be sour. Besides, people in the mountains were not in the habit of working at night. First off, we didn't have power. But that's not the main reason. My mom and dad used to say, there's a time and place for everything. Daytime is for work, nighttime is for sleep. So we would skim milk in the morning and combine it with the morning milk. Even though we separate cream from the milk, it doesn't affect the quality of cheese.
I know the water is very important. We've talked a little bit about it off camera. Talk to me about, I know you use spring water here, but talk to me about the differences in water and how do you get it clean enough to work with the cheese?
We go by its taste. You need to taste the water. Water in the mountains is so pure. There's a glacier 6 kilometers away from our village. We can recognize the taste of each spring. We make sure we use the purest water for brine. To do that, you need to wait 3 or 4 days after the last rainfall before using the water. You want to avoid rainwater mixing with the spring water. That's key.
In some places in Denmark and in Japan, farmers have played classical music to their cows because they believe that it will make the milk taste better and the meat taste better. We've had experience at a winery where they played classical music to the grapes. Have you tried that? Is that something that you've thought about doing here?
In the mountains, cows graze in areas where the sound of the terek and the whistling of the wind are the best music. This is nature. Why add more music? The main thing is the pasture, but I haven't tried it.
Tell me about the word mishurat. What does that mean? I know that you call yourself mishurat. What is the meaning behind this word?
It's an old Ossetian woman's name, and there has never been a bad person with the name Mishurat. Translated into Russian, it means my image, me, to do something, and image, me, shurat. It's like work. It's my life. I was once friends with a man who called me Mishurat. And I used to say to him all the time, I'm not old, I'm young. And he would say to me, when you talk about the mountains, I get an image of a grown-up woman who knows how to make cheese and milk cows and all that.
Off camera, you were telling me a story about how you could identify cheeses by walking into the store and say, this one is done by Larissa, this one is done by this family. It's just fascinating to me.
By taste, by the handwriting. I was told to make cheese in the same shape. I said, how can I make cheese in the same shape when the amount of milk is always different? I can also recognize my cheese when I see it at the market or anywhere else. I don't have much cheese here now, but I used to have a lot in the mountains. My sister comes to help with the milk. My brother once said to a friend, you won't believe it. Larissa knows every cheese by sight. Because the process takes time. Every 3 or 4 days, the cheese has to be washed and salted, like today. It's a colossal job.
Ossetian pies are the backbone of local cuisine. And apart from being delicious, they represent a deep philosophical meaning. We were invited to join in the cooking process. Wow, this all looks and smells wonderful. Hi, hi.
Hello, nice to meet you.
So, tell me, I know that Ossetian pies, it's more than just food, it's a tradition as well. Tell me what's this all about.
Pies are not only an important part of our traditional culture, they're part of our history. In the past, they were often used as camp food for soldiers, shepherds, and hunters because they could be kept for some time. Women did not go hunting, nor did they herd cattle in the mountains. So they were the ones who took care of the house, raising kids, and cooking. So Ossetian pies are often made in the mountains. For special celebrations, we usually make 3 pies. We make other types of pastry as well. These are our holiday traditions.
Is it true that in the old times that it took almost a week in advance to prepare a pie for a festival or for a party?
In the past, a week before a holiday or other solemn occasion, a ritual was organized to wash wheat in a river or stream. It always had to be running water. The washed grain was left to dry on a canvas spread along the banks, and after that was threshed in the best mill in the area. Today, if there is a big celebration, we prepare the pies in advance, too. But we can do it any day, as it's fast and easy.
Ossetian pies, they're a part of your culture, they're a part of your history. Is it something that you're proud of, something that you enjoy?
Every Saturday, we make 3 pies for the Sunday. A good mistress would always make a pie that has a thin layer of dough and rich stuffing. Most often, it's cheese and meat, but greens, potatoes, cabbage, pumpkin, beans, mushrooms, and cherries are also used as a filling. It's not just food for us. We address God during the 3-pie ritual at every festive meal.
Well, now that we know how it's made and a little bit about its meaning, let's give it a taste. Something I've found fascinating, every single place where we've gone, we've sat down at the table, there have always been 3 pies at the table. Why is that the case?
Why 3 pies? In general, for holidays and other joyous occasions, the holy number for us is 3. The 3 pies had to be cheese. The 3 pies symbolize this. I'll show you. This is the upper world, the heavenly beings. The 2nd pie is the world of today, the regular people, and the bottom one is the lower world. Before the eldest family member begins to pray, to make a toast in honor of one God, it's necessary to separate them so that God can see the 3 worlds. 3 pies, 3 worlds. To make it clearer, we can also say that they are the future, the upper pie, the present, and the past.
Now, I understand that sometimes you only do two pies. Why is there ever an occasion where you only bake two?
We make three pies on happy occasions, weddings and holidays. When there is a funeral meal, the top pie, the top world, is removed. And we don't move them apart. There are two pies left. There remains the present and the past, which is the connection of the living with the beyond. As long as we remember our ancestors are alive. That is why two pies are placed on the table at funerals. But they are not separated. They remain together.
Also understand that when you are serving the pies, there's a special way that you have to cut them, a special number of pieces. You don't turn the pies. Talk to me a little bit about that tradition.
After the eldest has said their prayers and passed the glass, the youngest tastes a piece of the top pie, because they are our future, the young people who will continue on. So they are put back together and cut. We can't turn it, because the three worlds could mix. There would be chaos. The sacred meaning of this is that three worlds were created, and they are symbolized by three pies. You can't twist them, otherwise we have chaos. It's so the world doesn't get mixed up. On particularly festive occasions, we can again make three pies, but pies of a special triangular shape. When they are moved apart, they form a pattern with nine points, a symbol of infinity. The triangular pies should be torn with your hands rather than being cut with a knife. The round pies, however, are cut with a knife, and it's done according to a strict ritual. This is how you do it. First, you make a cut towards the eldest. This is all done by the youngest, who is assisting at the table. Then you cut it across. And then you cut the sides. This way we should get nine pieces. After reciting a prayer, the eldest gives the first piece to the youngest.
Are there any other traditions and rituals that you want to share that involve the food, the feast, sitting down at the table? Because it's also interesting.
When the elders met to discuss family matters, such as marriage arrangements or address social and political issues, they would put three pies on the table and then have a paced discussion. When the elders tried to reconcile families involved in a bloody feud, they would have them sit on two sides of one table, one family's elders on one side and the other family's elders on the other, and they would put three pies on the table in the middle. And if the families were ready to reconcile, one family would take a piece of pie, and that was a clear signal that they were ready to move on. If the other family was also ready, they would have some pie too. If they weren't ready to reconcile, they wouldn't touch the three pies, because they are a sacred meal. If the two parties share this meal, that means they pledge to reconcile, and God is their witness. So three pies have been used for important negotiations, where deals have to be made that are sacred, that cannot be broken.
Now, for me, it's all incredibly beautiful that there are all of these traditions. But for you personally, what does it mean to you to see these traditions carried on? Is it important for you? What does it make you feel?
We take pride in our culture. A culture is a lot more than just baking three pies and eating them. It's about customs, and it teaches us to be composed. It's been developed over centuries and handed down from generation to generation by our forefathers. And now it is our duty to teach it to our children, so they carry it on in the future. If we give up our traditions, we will give up our national identity. Our nation will cease to exist, and we'll have no future, no tomorrow. That's why all these traditions are sacred to me. I try to do everything the right way, because if I make a mistake, younger generations might pick it up. It's an educational process. So it's very important for me, and I'm proud to be part of our culture. We're now trying to pass our traditions to our younger generations, so they keep our culture alive, as our forefathers kept them alive for thousands of years.
We have traveled extensively through the epic landscapes of North Ossetia. We have marveled at the nature, tasted the delicacies that have been passed down from generation to generation. It has all been so magnificent. But the most special aspect of our journey has been the people here, sharing their stories, their homes, and their culture so warmly and openly. This is the true treasure of North Ossetia, Alania.